weeknights from 6
on 2FM.
Big thanks to Beta Da Silva for taking us through the afternoon here on 2FM. It's Monday the 30th of September and you're listening to Game On. Coming up between now and the new music show at 7 o'clock, Sharon Lynch sums up Ireland's amazing win over New Zealand in women's rugby.
Oh, what an amazing win it was. In soccer, Paul Corry and Stephen Kelly review the Premier League and we're live to Talca Park as the title race lives on in the League of Ireland.
Plus in men's rugby, Johnny Holland runs the rule over Connacht's comeback and Munster's embarrassment in the URC. If you want to have your say, you can text us on 51552, WhatsApp us on 087 187 9200 and we're on X at Game On 2FM.
Game On 2FM.
Welcome along. Paul Corry is with me in studio. How are you, Paul?
I'm very well, Marie.
Ruby, good weekend.
All good, Marie. Yeah, great weekend. Yourself?
Yeah, we can talk through all of our weekend highlights in just a bit. But first, to that very famous win overnight for Ireland over the Black Ferns. We're going to hear from ex-Irish international Sharon Lynch very shortly. But first, here are some match highlights, followed by the player of the match, Aoife Wafer.
Chance for Ireland to get straight back into this match. And they're going to get a scrum penalty, and that will do even more. Away goes Aoife Wafer. She's going to be hard to stop from there. Burrowing low, marching over the line, scoring! Brilliance from Aoife Wafer and Ireland. They punish New Zealand's mistakes.
Ireland have scrambled and hustled and then put pressure on
steady
at key moments like they can now. Wafer's going to bounce out in the back again. She's gone blindside once more. Going to go herself, Aoife Wafer, and get her second try.
Just metres, a metre and a half of that. O'Dowd, the next one up. Ireland's runners lining up now. Scuffle McKay barking orders at them. Half a metre short, New Zealand. So Kuapa off her feet. Ireland going to crash over, but they're going to have to look here. Well, it's clearly explained to New Zealand. And it was Neve Jones with the awareness. And now the smile is Ireland. Extend their advantage. Maloney, they set, and once again they go quickly, they peeled away, courting everyone just about. Maloney almost at the line, and a try is given. Ireland, what a brilliance, and it's Erin King who comes up with it.
Full money, you think. New Zealand already there, they're waiting for the drive to come on. And what they don't recognise is the nil front peel, and then look at the speed. The speed of ball, King. Doesn't need an asking, can see the white drive.
Into the final 2 minutes now, and Ireland go. They come away with it, and Neve O'Dowd just caught short of the line. They caught New Zealand napping. Here comes Ireland. Wafer. Lane clears away. They bury the head. Hogan is just driven back in the tackle. New Zealand having to scramble. Ireland funnel it back. It's slow and it's deliberate. It's low and hard.
On the goal line. Hands up.
Back they come again. Pick and go once more. It's tight. They are almost over. They are inches, millimetres away. And the try is given. It is Erin King again. A second try off the bench.
This is an important kick. Dana O'Brien for the lead for Ireland. She has gone off.
Yeah, it's pretty indescribable, to be honest. Like, as a kid growing up in rugby, I've dreamed of this day. I've dreamed of facing the Haka, dreamed of beating the All Blacks and the Black Ferns, and we've done that here today. So, yeah, I'm so proud of everyone in our squad.
What about your own performance? Another player of the match performance, 2 tries in the first half. Describe that for us.
I suppose the girls like to give me the ball a little bit, and I just put my head and try run through a brick wall for them. So, yeah, I'll do anything for the team, and if that means tucking up the jumper and running into somebody, I'll do that. But I think, like, the back three were doing brilliant on pulling their wingers out and creating a bit more space for me. So, yeah, it was just run straight from there.
and a historic victory, but as you mentioned, only the start. Two massive weeks now ahead for the team.
Yeah, two big weeks. Like, we've Canada up next, who bet the Black Ferns over in the Pac-4 there earlier this year. We'll take them on first, and then we'll go to USA, who put up a really good fight against England today. So yeah, we've big weeks coming up, and we're here to compete.
So that was player of the match Aoife Wafer speaking after Ireland's historic 29-27 win over the Black Ferns. We're joined now by former Irish international Sharon Lynch. Sharon, what a win for the Ireland women's team. And to be fair, quite an unexpected one, but deserve it.
Yeah, look, we don't like saying that we don't expect them to beat New Zealand or any team. But look, yeah, it has to be said that it was a surprise, but very, 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 very pleasant one. But like I suppose what I said on Friday, I mean, it's 15-15 when you go out there, and they'd obviously done their homework, and like, they went in with a mentality that, look, we can beat anyone if we put our minds to it. And it just showed they kept it going to literally the last minute in the game and never gave up. And it just proved that it worked for them. It was a fantastic game, unbelievable.
Sharon, fortune always favours the brave, but Ireland played with great imagination. The dummy runs, the lines they were running. Like, to play with bravery is not the easiest thing in the world, but they were on the front foot. They were so brave.
Yeah, no, 100%. Like, bravery alone gets you so far. Like, they were so creative off the line-outs, the scrums, everything. They really showed that, look, it's not just about going through the motions, that they played what was in front of them. They obviously had a few training ground moves that I could see that seemed to work out for them as well. But, yeah, look, it was great to see that. It was great to see that they didn't just go through the motions, and they tried a few things, and it paid off.
We spoke on Friday, Sharon, a little bit about that momentum that they had built up and those almost incremental gains since the Six Nations. And you could almost see that they were playing with a little bit more confidence, that you knew that they had put the work in and that they believed in what they could do.
Yeah, look, 100%. I've heard Scott say in their interviews, and they seem to, well, obviously this tournament was going to be building depth and keep momentum going from the Six Nations, but they also, I suppose, seemed to have an agenda of going out there and being a hard team to beat. I've heard this said a few times, like, they want to not just show up and be one of the numbers. Like, they wanted to make it difficult for teams when they come up against them, and like that showed there against Australia and New Zealand. I mean, two unbelievable teams. And like, that's all great, but you have to keep showing up. Like, you have to keep, like, the next game will be the same. Like, the momentum that they carried through that game, we want to see that through the next one. And I think that's what they want. That at the end of the day, at the end of this tournament, if they have the momentum built up and, you know, playing against these big tough teams and getting the experience in the legs, like, that will be a very successful tournament for them.
But look, so much of the game is defence, and you're right. But Brittany Hogan led the tackle count with 18, and then turnovers. I mean, Ireland only lost 8, but they won 11. Like, those small margins that matter so much in rugby.
Yeah, 100%, and so that's what it came down to at the end of the day. I mean, like, all the tries that were scored, I mean, scoring 5 tries against New Zealand on any given day is amazing. And then obviously the tries that they scored and some disallowed, so they had to, I suppose, put in the work, and those little gains all add up. So they'll have to, I presume that they'll know from doing the analysis today and tomorrow, that they'll want to work on things, and not everything went their way, and they'll obviously want to improve then going on to the next game. And that's all it is getting those gains and then improving on what didn't work, and just keep going forward.
Aoife Wafer might not have been a worldwide household name before this weekend. We all knew who she was, but certainly she made a huge impact, didn't she?
Oh, she does every game. It's scary. Like, the girl's 21 years old. Like, what is in store for her? But, like, listening to her there, I mean, she talks about, like, the girls give her the ball. Like, it's not even about that. Like, she is screaming for that ball. She wants to be, you know, in, like, ball-carrying positions. And she's not going to hitting walls. Like, she's going, you know, making defense think, and she's sidestepping, and she's going through gaps. Like, that's what makes her so amazing. She's not just banging into people. Mm-hmm. She is, you know, making some serious yards, the carries, the tries. Her stats are insane. She's such an exciting player. And even the likes of Aaron King now as well, like, the 2 tries from her, and she must be just buzzing coming off the bench. Like, they're just unbelievable statistics that you want to see. And if you've a coach seeing those kind of stats, like, you're just delighted, especially when you've got some players on the bench that are itching to come in, and it's fantastic to see.
What I loved about listening to Aoife was that she grew up wanting to play this game. She dreamt of beating the Black Ferns. She dreamt of playing for Ireland, and I'm sure she's dreamt of bigger things as well. But it just shows that there are, you know, young girls growing up wanting to be Ireland rugby players. It's not all about going from a different sport or finding them when they're already developed somewhere else. But there's a cohort now and a pool that seem to be building. Obviously, we need more depth, but it's a positive sign, isn't it, Sharon?
Unbelievable. So look, we all have these childhood dreams to play these big teams and to fulfil them then, and to be part of it, not just showing up and standing on the sidelines. Like, she's literally leading it from the front. You talk about leaders in a situation like that. Like, I mean, she's such a young girl, but she's already becoming a leader of the team, and, you know, being the front of line speed and defence, and being in lineouts and robbing ball from teams like New Zealand. Like, they're just childhood dream stuff. Yeah, she's living her dream, and she looks like she's loving everything. Every single minute of it, which is even better to see.
Dreams are wonderful, but reality is a totally different thing. Mm-hmm. But how do you get from England beating you 88-10 in the Six Nations, not 6 months ago, to last weekend?
I know, yeah. I suppose, I don't care how they got there. It's down to a lot of things, because the players themselves haven't changed that much. Sometimes it's all down to mentality. Sometimes the coaching staff has obviously played a huge part in this. But it's a lot of it's down to belief and the confidence in yourselves, and then just clicking as a team. And I think the likes of, I suppose, the Interpros that they've just gone through the Celtic Cup Challenge that they played in, even the WXB 3 that they played in last year, and the Six Nations, they all play a massive role in just building confidence, getting those, not even a loss can build confidence. You can get gains from losing games, and just taking it one game at a time. And now, like, you can just see that the trajectory is just going upwards. It's all about looking forward, and you can't really look back, even if it is only a short time ago. But these girls don't care about that. They're so young that they're just thinking of the future and the World Cup that's coming up ahead of them, which is what you want them to be thinking about.
Yeah, and huge ticket sales for that already. They only went on last week. But from Scott Beeman's perspective, I guess they'll be getting up probably soon enough now, or they'll be doing a video review around now. What's going to please him most when he watches back and does his analysis?
But they never gave up. Like, they had that never say die attitude. They started from the offset. You know, they really put it in their faces, and they were. I suppose their defence was unbelievable. Even it was shaken at times, but they never gave up. Like, they still came up in a line together. They really held that defence, even against a team like New Zealand. They kept momentum going as well. Like, that's his buzzword that you listen to him in any of his interviews. It's just building that momentum and, you know, keeping the confidence going. Be consistent as well. I mean, there's no point playing that game, beating New Zealand and then going against Canada next week and not playing the same game and not moving forward. So I suppose it's building that confidence back all the time. I think from looking at the girls afterwards, like, that is going to just keep them going all week long, even through the recovery and the hard session that they'll have this week. You know, they'll just drive on, and look, it'll be long forgotten. Like, the coaching staff will obviously enjoy and make them enjoy today and tomorrow, and then the analysis of it, but that'll be it. Like, you'll have to forget about it, you'll have to move on. But look, I'd say he's a happy coach today, and look forward then to the next game.
Well, whatever the review brings about, the preview of next weekend will probably take up as much time. That will be Canada, who played France at the weekend, and the Canadians were strong.
Yeah, no, 100%. Look, we knew that they would be. I mean, second in the world, you're not there for no reason. So, look, yeah, and the analysis will be take up most of the week, and that the girls will enjoy that. Another team to focus on. And I suppose they'll want to try new things as well. You know, hopefully they won't play out the same team, that they'll mix things up a bit and try and give some depth to the squad and give a lot of people experience, and which is what I think the tournament is for predominantly. So, look, yeah. We know easy task, but I don't think these girls are going to fear anybody at the moment, which is fantastic.
The mindset does shift a bit though when you get a big scalp like New Zealand, and it feels like, okay, maybe we were talking about the different goals they would have heading into these series, but all of a sudden it just feels really different, Sharon, for them now.
Yeah, a good difference, I'd imagine. Yeah, positive difference.
Yeah, look.
And that's, look, it's not a bad thing to do, but you're going to, the coaching staff are going to have to bring them down to earth pretty quickly. And they're going to let them enjoy this 100%. And friends and family are going to be buzzing. You can see it all over the papers, social media, you know, and let them enjoy that. But, you know, they have to focus on the next game now. Like, they have a short window to prepare. And, like I said, they could be bringing in new girls, could be changing things around, and there'll be some disappointments as well. Like, that's all part of it. So, yeah, I think it's a good place to be in, but like that, it's a short window to enjoy it and then move on and face the next game, because there's no point going into Canada and not having the work on what they've just worked on and keep progressing, because otherwise it will be a disappointing game. Even if they play well but don't work on it and keep working on what they've improvements, it will be disappointing to them. So I think that's the wins isn't really the key here. It's about working on their game.
Exactly, yeah, and they certainly did that for the New Zealand game, and looking forward to seeing them now over the next few weeks as well, and talking to you, Sharon, too. Thank you so much, as always, for bringing us up to speed on everything that happened overnight for the Ireland women's rugby team with that magnificent victory over New Zealand. We're going to be back very shortly with the rest of our weekend sporting highlights after this break.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. That victory over New Zealand will no doubt go down in history, so memorable and so deserved as well. They were excellent. It would be my sporting highlight, but we've already done it, so I'm gonna find something else. So I didn't get up last night to watch the women's rugby, but I did get up on Saturday morning to watch the AFL Grand Final. We Declan Bogan on Friday night, and he'd set it up lovely for us with Conor McKenna being the big story. And so the Brisbane Lions, who Conor McKenna plays for, delivered. They absolutely thumped the Sydney Swans 120-60. Wasn't the greatest match, wasn't delighted that I got up at 5:30, but there was so much around it that I really enjoyed. Now, Conor McKenna only came on towards the end, but he did get the medal, and he has joined Ty Kennelly in that club of winning the All-Ireland and the AFL. And during COVID, Conor was on this programme and chatted to us when he was a Tyrone footballer and trying to figure out what he was going to do. So I was delighted to see him go back and have that experience and just get that medal. But the whole, it was like watching an All-Ireland final at 5:30 in the morning. So it was absolutely amazing. There was like 100,000 people at it in the Melbourne Cricket Ground, and they just seemed to put so much into the production, Ruby. So they had like at halftime, they had a load of players doing a sprint off, like the presentation at the end. They had kids involved, and they had like former players given the man of the match and the coach awards and stuff like that. I just thought that they have really added to the production of it, that it was really entertaining.
A huge event,
like just all these kind of little bit of all these extra bits that made you, even though I didn't know who all the players were and the game was really one sided, I was sitting down watching the halftime show kind of thing, you know. So it was,
you're a staunch GAA person.
Yeah.
So listen to you, I get the feeling you think maybe it's gone a bit stale.
I just think you can add a few extra things to it. Like, I think that there could be a little bit more engagement around the day. Like, we see the college games coming over here and they close off streets in the city and they do loads of different kind of types of parties. I think that we could make a bigger deal out of over 80,000 people from all around the country coming to Dublin for a big game. I think that there could be inventive ways to engage the existing fans, the next generations. I loved the bit at the with the kids presenting the medals. Every single player got their moment specifically to walk up onto the stage and to get their medal put around them by a little kid. And for that little kid, it was absolutely amazing. There was one little girl, I don't know who the player was, but she just took a minute and said, you know, you're my hero. And it was the loveliest little moment. It was only a small thing. As I said, the match wasn't unbelievable, but there was just a lot that kept you engaged and captivated, even though you didn't know who everybody was, or you know, you weren't that invested because it was a one-sided game. It was, you know, I was still watching it.
The show. I get the feeling, Marie, it was the show as much as the match.
Yeah, and then obviously Conor McKenna was a huge draw because it's great.
How many people were Conor McKenna inspired to follow him? There's a huge exodus. Like, I was in the stall last week and they were talking about the amount of young talent that has left Kerry to go to the AFL.
It's so hard to make it over there, Ruby. The girls is a different story altogether, but it's really, really difficult. Like, Conor McKenna is only the second person to have won the All-Ireland and the AFL Championship. Like, a couple of other people have won become the AFL champion, but it's not an easy game to make it in. Like, when you're watching it, the athleticism of these guys and girls is just mind-blowing. It's a game that it's hard enough to become really good at it, but it's so far away as well, Ruby. Like, I know John Heslin quite well, and we've had him on a few times, and he went when he was young and just found the time difference so hard to connect with your family, and just going to a whole new environment. So, like, I think it's great for a while, but like any sport, you have to commit your life to it. Like, you have to go over when you're quite young and spend X amount of years kind of getting the conditioning up and putting the work in, because you see these guys and they're just supreme athletes, and it just takes time. So it's,
if you're young and you're Irish and you're dreaming about being a professional athlete, what's open to you? Rugby? Soccer? Do you play GA all your life? This is
the
door.
That's probably
open.
It. Like, unless you're very lucky and get into the NFL now, like some of the kickers are. But yeah, it is the only one, really. But it's very far away. That's my thing on it.
World's a small place.
Yeah. Then. Well, I asked the kids, actually, we were watching it together, and I said, would any of you like to go? And one of them said, I'd have to build a whole new life. And, like, to hear a 12-year-old say that, like, it was quite... I was like, yeah, you would. And, you know, that's the decision.
He's going to build three different lives anyway. He doesn't realise now that his friends in school won't be his friends in secondary school.
No, he doesn't.
It'll be a different bunch of friends in college as well.
But that is the thinking, though, when you're making the decision. Are you prepared to build a whole new life for yourself very far away from home? Paul Corry, you did it.
I wasn't that far away, though.
But still, you did move away when you were very young.
Yeah, well, 20 years of age. Sheffield was certainly felt a little different than Dublin, and there was probably a transition there. You see, the part I found difficult was I was so busy between studying commerce and UCD and playing in the League of Ireland to then change that around completely and train for 2.5-3 hours a day and then just have all this spare time. Mm-hmm. That took me a little bit of getting used to.
I was watching Rashida Adeleke on the Late Show on Friday, and she spoke about how difficult it was to move to Texas. Mm-hmm. And it was the case of being, all of a sudden you go from being the big fish in the small pond to the opposite, and that takes a big adjustment as well. Like, that there is a whole other world out there.
Huge.
So there you go. Anyone else got a sporting highlight, Ruby?
Go on, Paul. Surely you have.
Yeah, you mentioned the League of Ireland in the intro there, Ruby, and it was another bonkers weekend of results. And I thought the game that stood out for me was Pats going to Shamrock Rovers and Tallaght winning 3-0. And it wasn't just the performance that stood out, it's just the manner of the result. Ever since they got knocked out by Bazakasir in Europe, they've won 4 games on the bounce. They're the informed team in the League of Ireland, and between Joe Redmond, Jake Mulroney and Macy Media, I think they have the 3 best players in the league. And for me, I think it's a bit of a marker for next season. I think if there was more games left in the season, you would see St. Pat's get very close to the top teams, because they are so in form and the other teams are so out of form. But I just thought the way they played, Mulroney's last goal turned league race inside out. Unbelievable finish. Mason Mealy has just turned 17.
Well, those three are young though, are they?
Mulroney's had, like, he's been to the MLS,
yeah,
and he played in the MLS and he's come back. Mason Mealy is only 17, is leading the line for a League of Ireland team, and he gave Pico Lopez the runaround the other night. So you could expect that he will potentially go and make a move to the UK, and I would imagine then he might get loaned back. But they are playing Shelburne tonight and he's on the bench.
Oh, right.
I understand that they'll take him in or leave him in and then take him out at different moments.
He's so
still
young.
Learning the game.
Yeah. Ruby, sporting highlight?
I didn't have one, Marie. I was in Ballindeniskeven eventing at the weekend with the kids. Outside Watergrass Hill, Cork. That's where we were for the weekend, in the lashing rain and the driving wind yesterday, but it was great fun, I must say. Outside of that note, Cora was pretty low-key affair. Euphrates won the Cesarewitch. There wasn't two sinners at the Cora, I'm afraid, at the weekend. But I did think Lake Victoria was very good in the Cheveley Park at Newmarket on Saturday. Aidan O'Brien again. And this weekend, of course, is Paris, the Arc de Triomphe.
Right, comes around real quick, Ruby, doesn't it?
Every year does, Marie.
The only time I think about it is when it's on, and then I obviously don't think about it again. So when you remind me of it, I feel like I was thinking about that only yesterday.
Yeah, there you are now.
So, Paul, let's go back to the League of Ireland for just a minute, because there is that huge game tonight between Shells and Pats. Shells were on the telly on Friday against Sligo Rovers. They had a huge opportunity. I don't know if they knew they had the huge opportunity. They probably did, because Shamrock Rovers went behind so early, and Derry didn't manage to get a result either. But Are they going to start winning matches anytime soon? That is the question, because I'm finding it really difficult to watch them now.
It's 1-8, I think, is it? Yeah, it's slightly worrying from Michelle's perspective. I think what was a little more encouraging on Friday night when they played Sligo is there was a lot more intent to go and win the game, and there was probably a little less edginess to some of their play. That said, they're still not creating a huge amount of chances, and I think that has to be still a massive worry for Shelburne fans. They've played 31 games, only scored 32 goals, and if they are to get over the line, it feels like they're going to fall over. Now, tonight is a huge opportunity, given the fact that none of the other sides are playing, that they could extend their lead to 7 points if they were to beat St. Pat's. And I think if they do win tonight, I think that could just be enough, because every time the door opens for Derry, they're not able to take advantage. Shamrock Rovers are now too far back, and the other teams don't have enough games left to play. So it's a massive, massive game in Talca Park tonight. And for Shell's fans, this presents itself, I think, as the biggest opportunity that they'll have to just increase that gap and create that daylight between themselves and Derry.
So after tonight, Shell's Rovers will have, or Derry City will have another, will have 5 games left, but the others will have 4. They're on 54 points before they start tonight. What total wins the League of Ireland?
I would say 61, 62 I think would definitely do it, but I think anywhere in around 60, 61. Like, the scary thing is, Ruby, like, when you look at Shells and you look at Derry, in the last 5 games, Derry have picked up 5 points. Shelburne have picked up 6 points. Like, they're down the bottom half of the form table when you look throughout the league. And actually, Pats and Drogheda, the in-form teams, who were kind of teetering in and around the playoff position in the last couple of weeks. So I think anywhere around that 60-61 mark should be enough for Shells. And they've certainly got winnable games. They play a huge number of them at home. And you feel that a win... that's why I think tonight, if tonight opens up a gap of 7 points today, I think it's just going to be too big.
7 is enough for Shells tonight.
Just a word as well, Paul, before we move on to the Premier League. Troy Parrott and his continuing really good form for AZ Alkmaar. He scored another goal, which is exactly what you want to see from him finally.
Yeah, he's found a home, and that's the best way of putting it. Troy is obviously, there was so much hope. I think it was the maybe 3-4 years ago when he started playing pre-season games and he started for Tottenham against Real Madrid, and I think people were maybe getting excited that he would get minutes in the first team. Went out alone to press and didn't really happen for him, and maybe going and taking himself out of the limelight to Holland has probably suited him. I think the game and the nature in which it's played over in Holland is probably a little more technical and a lot less physical than it would be in the lower leagues in the UK, and that feeds into Troy's game and how he likes to set up, and the fact that he's scoring goals is brilliant. And it does, it, like, the international window is going to come around very, very quickly, and I think Troy is pulling himself up there to potentially start, or at least be coming off the bench. And if he doesn't, and if people like Liam Scales don't again, there'll be a lot of questions asked about management, because they're the informed players at this moment in time.
Okay, let's move to the Premier League. Stephen Kelly is with us now. I think we've waited long enough to discuss Man United's 3-0 defeat to Spurs. And unsurprisingly, Stephen, all the talk now is about how long Erik ten Hag will hang on to his job. The headlines are that he is going to be in situ for another while, but it does feel like it's inevitable that he's going to go at some stage. But is it the right thing for him to go, Stephen?
I honestly don't know what to do. I think maybe the fact that they made it so public in the summer that they were actually actively looking for another manager, I don't think that's going to go down well. And it's not so much him, but it's... Within the group of players and stuff and all, the players should just listen to what the manager said and be told, but it will start creeping in their head that he's not going to be here for the long run. They're constantly got an eye on someone else, and I'm sure there's whispers and murmurs within the change room that the potential of someone else coming in. So I don't think they probably think he's secure in his job, and that shouldn't affect you performing, but it probably does. In the long run, I just can't see it happen. I also think that what's made it probably worse is the fact that another Dutchman has come into another English club and has got them top of the table, and that was in the back of what everybody said was could have been a poison chalice, coming in the back of a legacy manager and Klopp, and you know, being in Liverpool and being their rivals. The fact that he's come in, he's hit the ground running, and Liverpool have a clear identity of how they're playing, I think that exacerbates the situation for Ten Hag.
So, Paul, is Arnie Slot that much a better manager than Erik ten Hag? Or does Arnie Slot just have that many better players than Erik ten Hag?
Probably a combination of the two, Ruby. I think the squad that Slot inherited is far stronger than what Ten Hag had to work with. But I think also when you monitor what Ten Hag has done over the last couple of years, to Stephen's point, it's very hard to pinpoint Manchester United as what type of football they try to play. They don't really initiate an aggressive press and try win the ball high up the pitch. They're not exactly brilliant at playing out from the back. And it looks as if Ten Hag has almost run out of ideas of how to actually get the most out of the squad. You can see him on the touchline. He looks so void of ideas of how to change the game or how to get the most out of his players. And I also think some of the recruitment has been really poor as well to go with that.
Stephen, they just don't look like they are top-class footballers. Like, in possession, they don't seem to be at the level. And then out of possession, they almost look like they're even worse. Is that management, as Paul said, just not been able to, whatever's happening on the training field, be able to get them to perform when it matters?
Yeah, and it is. The accountability that the players should have on them should be huge, because, like, sometimes the lack of effort and the lack of running, you know, you're thinking, how could that possibly be? But it always comes back to the manager and what he's doing with them and whether he can get the best of those players. And that's his job. That's effectively all he has to do. His job, not all he has to do, but he has to try and get them. And I think as well, losing to Tottenham in the manner that he did, with a manager's been in the job a year and everybody can go, that's exactly how Tottenham play. Look how they play. Win, lose, or draw, they play like that. It's entertaining and it's fun and it's enjoyable. It might not win them something, but it might come to fruition with something in the season. So I think that probably made it worse for him that he lost to a team that are so easily noticeable, that's Tottenham now, and that's what a manager that's been there a year.
Have you been in a situation, Stephen, like that, where the manager, it appears, has lost the dressing room and the players just don't want to play for him?
But it's weird, because when you say you lost dressing, you don't want to play for him, you're still going out and you still have personal pride in how you perform. So it's a weird thing to think that you're not performing well for this manager because he's lost a trainer, because what I should come down to is, I'm going on the pitch, I'm representing this club, and I should be the best version of me I could possibly be. But that doesn't happen. Sometimes it's so hard to pinpoint what it is and why it changes and why when you go on the pitch it doesn't click, and there's a level of a discontent within the squad, and that creeps into the way you play. And like, it's a really strange thing, because you think you should be able to just cross the line and play and that's it, but it does, and it can affect it, and I can kind of see that creeping into Man United.
Paul, is it possible to buy that many slow footballers, or the Man United players just making no effort?
That's a very good question. I mean, there's a lot of heavy legs, it seems, when Manchester United are playing. They're so passive and they're so slow. They're so unenthusiastic without the ball. It's incredible. Like, the first goal from a Tottenham perspective is brilliant, and I actually think Van de Ven has been an unbelievable signing for them. He's so quick, and he gives so much security to that back four with regards to kind of playing a high line in his recovery. But the first goal, Ruby, I mean, he literally runs straight through the heart of the Manchester United team.
It was like watching an under-12s game.
It was unbelievable. Gary Neville was really dialing up. It was a magical run. I couldn't believe it, how easy it was for him to just cut through the heart and play a simple ball across. Dalot doesn't track the run, and it's 1-0. And, like, this is a continuation. If you actually saw the goal that FC20 scored during the week, it was the exact same. He ran straight through the middle of the team. Eriksen coughed up the ball and they equalised. And it's starting to become a bit of a worry, because there are trends in Manchester United games. The performances aren't there. The players look as if they've run out of ideas. And to your point, there's no energy about them.
If you're Gareth Southgate, who's now been linked with the job, I mean, he's been linked with a few jobs, but he is probably looking for a job now, Stephen, would you be going in there with that level of player?
You know what, the level of scrutiny he had as England manager, I'm not sure he'd want to go into that at United and have even maybe more scrutiny on him to have that team up and running and with the players he has. Like, I suppose the only thing for Gareth Southgate and why he created, and listen, I'm not sure he's going to get that job, but the whole thing with him in England was creating an atmosphere around the training ground, around the camp, that when they came in, all the players wanted to be there and they wanted to represent England and they were happy to be around it, which was what was said. The England teams have gone by of all that talent didn't have that, which is why they've been successful to some extent. So maybe going in there and galvanising the group and feeling like you can pull them together and actually have a tight-knit unit is potentially up his street.
But honestly, going in there on the back of the England job, like the level of stress seems
life's ridiculous. Too short, Stephen, is it? Life's too short to be Manchester United manager.
Enjoy the beach for a few weeks longer, and then something better will come along.
We haven't given Spurs any credit, but like they still orchestrated a very impressive 3-0 victory, and just seem to, as you said, be doing exactly what Ange Postecoglou wants them to do week after week.
Yeah, it's great to watch. It's easy on the eye when we're not conceding goals because we're the whole team's like we're in the 18-yard box. But it's good, entertaining football. It's really easy to see the way they want to play and how they want to play. And the difference they have now is you have players are coming back to form. So Maddison was really off for last season. He's back up to high speed. He's back up to level. Kulusevski's back up to level. Bentancourt is a sensational footballer. Genuinely, he's such a good footballer. Watching him close up, he's so talented. He could play with any of the teams in the Premier League. Seriously could. And getting him back after his injuries and back to a level where he can actually be in the team regularly playing can affect us. So having all those players back fit, Van de Ven, you know, he had a hamstring injury last season. There's no signs of that now. He's like the road runner, and then Romero beside him. So I think it's a combination of having all the main players back. It's when they drop out, when they drop off form, then Tottenham will struggle again because their first 11 really, really causes problems. And you think you add Son to that mix instead of Werner, and they probably score 3 or 4 more because the positions he got into, Sonny would have finished them all day long. So their first 11, maybe 2 or 3 come in, are excellent. And then you lose a few of them and they cause themselves problems.
Paul, Ten Hag might be struggling, but Maresco seems to have found a key to Chelsea.
Right, Chelsea are flying at the moment, Ruby. I think the caveat to it is the teams that they've played, you would expect Chelsea to pick up points. Maybe not win all the games, but certainly pick up points. And there was a lot of questions at the beginning of the season as to whether or not kind of Cole Palmer was going to be able to repeat the form of last year and score 22 goals. I actually think it's now gotten to a point where he needs to be held in a higher esteem. Like, this guy's a special talent. It's not only his goals, his movement is very good, his decision making, his way to pass, his first touch. He has absolutely everything within his game to be one of the top attacking players in the Premier League. And in fairness to Nicholas Jackson, I think he has been good as well with the form that he's shown. Jadon Sancho, like, kind of bringing it back to Manchester, he's been brilliant since he's come in at Chelsea. And the only thing that would worry me as a Chelsea fan in that perspective is you just have to look at the nature of the two goals that they conceded. Like, it was really criminal stuff from Sanchez for both goals, really. One trying to play it from the back and the decision making to try come and clear the first goal with a punch. That would be the concern, that they might leak a couple of goals. They feel like they're missing a big commanding centre half and a goalkeeper. And if you kind of go back to Liverpool, what they did with Alisson and Van Dijk, for Chelsea, they have a lot of good players, a lot of strength and depth, great attacking threat, but they're probably missing that bit of security at home.
Stephen, I loved Palmer's reaction to his miss in the second half when he was trying to get a fifth. He didn't shrug it off and smile, "I have four." He was disgusted with himself.
He's raging, but is that the sign of someone that's...
Yes,
that
it is.
..wants to be professional? That's what you want to see, isn't it? I can tell you were going, I love that. I love that about him, that he's disappointed. Are you thinking, how could he be disappointed to score 4? No, well, that's what he scored for, because he's disappointed that he's missed the fifth. And that's what sets him apart. But honestly, I was one of those people that said, really, you're spending this much money on this lad and he's not really proven? I just hadn't seen enough of him to know what he was capable of. And now I'm going, there's not many players that Pep lets go that I say he'd regret that. Well, he's probably regretting this now because he's unreal. Like, the level of calmness when he's in possession of the ball, when the vision he has, and then he just glides past players like they're not theirs. And then when you go through a goal, can he finish? Yes, he can. He's a wonderful talent. And what's happening now as well, that Chelsea team around them are growing in confidence and they're playing better. So that's only going to improve him. I don't think he's the type of player that needs to be... He's not Matt Letizia. I don't think he needs to have everybody else around him not being great and him being this shining light and all the focus on him. I think he's capable of playing in a team where players are actually better around them and then they come up together and improve. And yeah, I think it's a scary thought of what Chelsea could be in the future with him at the forefront of it.
Chelsea have done a lot of, you know, dodgy enough business under Todd Bowley. Selling Mason Mount for 60 million and bringing in Cole Palmer for 40 is one of the better pieces of business they've done.
There's some great memes going around of Pep as well, sadness in his eyes and pictures of Cole Palmer beside him. So back to Pep then, Man City Newcastle drawing 1-1. Are we seeing a few chinks in the Man City armour, do you think, Stephen?
I don't know about chinks. I think
I think first the goal was brilliant. How Guardiola stepping inside. How is one of the best centre backs playing left back now stepping inside and whipping the ball with his right foot in the bottom corner? It's ridiculous. That Pep has converted him into this raiding left back. It's crazy.
Sounds like your transformation, Stephen.
Yeah, it was. exactly the same. No, but it's just, I think Pep, this is going to be, for me, if they go on to win the league, this would be the time where, I know they have a great squad and I know they have like the likes of Haaland, who's going to score probably 30 goals a season for them, which you just can't buy. But for Pep to achieve something this season with Rodri missing, and I know De Bruyne was out and I know Haaland was out last year, but Rodri has been just so pivotal in them. So him being able to adjust to that and deal with that going forward, and if them still being successful, that will be, it puts him way ahead of everybody else for me at the end of the season, if that's the case. But I think chinks in their armor, yes, but I think it's down to personnel and that they're going to have to find a way to play without these players.
Paul Corrie, we are tight on time. Liverpool are top, Arsenal ground out result against Leicester, but I want to talk about another fella that I thought was brilliant, and that was Liam Delap for Ipswich.
Absolutely superb. Another player who has come through that Manchester City pathway and sold on for actually quite big money, but everything that we've seen from him in the first couple of weeks shows that he has, you know, the components to be a really good Premier League striker. He's brilliant, Ruby, at actually dribbling with the ball and being powerful.
What are his throws like?
We've yet to see. But the two finishes on the weekend were brilliant. The first one was a real kind of quick snapshot at the front post, and the other one was a really well-guided, you know, right-footed finish into the bottom corner. And you feel like if Ipswich are to survive, they're going to need to keep him fit and they're going to have to continue to supply him with chances. But he's shown a loss within his first couple of weeks, given the fact that he hasn't played much Premier League football before, that he can certainly be a top striker.
Okay, you happy with that, Ruby?
I am. I thought he was very good.
He's not good. England will cap him.
I was going to say, yeah, can we claim him?
England will cap him very soon.
I think we're on the very, I think we can, he can still play for us momentarily because he hasn't played three consecutive 21 games in a row, which is the only saving grace we have, because I think if he had to play the third game in a row when the 21's just gone, that was him for 3 years. I think there's a new rule.
Yeah, there is.
But at the moment, I think he can still play for us. But if you're him and you're looking at the England centre forward, which you think, I have a chance here.
Imagine him beside Evan Ferguson.
Okay, lads, thank you for that. We're going to take another break. We'll be back though with rugby. A really interesting URC weekend has just gone by, so Johnny Holland is going to talk us through all of that.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. So last weekend was round two of the URC Rugby Championship, and Johnny Holland joins us on the line for what was an up and down sort of a weekend. Johnny, Connacht were brilliant, Munster were shocking.
Absolutely, and I think that's the spectrum of results, like, isn't it? Munster were at one end of the spectrum and Connacht were on the other, and I think Ulster with a loss and Leinster with a straightforward win were probably somewhere in between.
Did last weekend paper over a few cracks? Were Connacht a little unlucky not to get a result against Munster?
Oh, you'd say so. Like, I think I saw Munster in the pre-season games, the Connacht games, or the Gloucester games, sorry, in particular, and, you know, they had some of the same errors in defence, and, you know, you look at a team that's scoring 30-odd points, they shouldn't be losing games. So, yeah, Connacht were unlucky, I think, last week. Now, they started the game very well against the Sharks, and then they went into a bit of a, you know, 20-minute period where they couldn't identify themselves, I'd say, considering what they did in the first 20 and in the second half. So they had their weaknesses at times as well, but they showed enough of a game that was there that they could have beaten Munster as well.
It was a great game to watch. Obviously, the second half, it was a game of, well, as you put it, a quarter and a half. But the second half in particular, to come back from this, like, there was 7-27 down at half time, it takes a fair bit of doing against the big South African side.
It does, especially when they were losing collisions and, you know, the momentum had gone against them and you're kind of wondering how they're going to pull it back. Like, obviously, half time for the team that's kind of letting the lead slip and then going, you know, 20 points behind and, you know, some of the scores, like two long range penalties, to be fair, but the other scores were a little bit too easy for Andres Hazen as well in the middle of the field for the first one, and coming off there was a maul in there as well. So some things were a bit too easy, like, and you're wondering how they're going to get that back. Like, you can't just switch on mentally all of a sudden in a game like that. But obviously what they did at half time, you know, they came out and there was a bit of a change as well. Maybe sometimes a change is a good thing. They were forced to make a change at half. And I actually think Cahill Ford was class. You know, he's a left-footed option, which we have a couple of now in Ireland. Like, and they're always, you know, useful in the national team with exits and stuff like that. But he just showed that he could do everything. He was catching balls in the air. He set up the first try with a kind of an overs break and a kind of a pass to Piers O'Connor, and then he had everything in between. He'd left foot a chip, Hansen caught it and gave it back inside to him, and that was kind of the resurgence. They needed something to break the Sharks down again, and I think he was the one that really provided it. I don't think he got man in a match, but for me, he was full value for it.
So for Pete Wilkins then, Johnny, does that mean he has a decision to make about the positioning of him?
Yeah, I think last weekend is probably not going to change the positioning of him, because, you know, he has out and out halves. I'm not sure what the story is with Joshua Annie now with his HIA, but like Jack Carty will come back into that position and things. But, you know, there's conversations around where Bundiaki fits back in and which side of him Kyle Ford goes into, because I think he's had a very consistent, you know, 2 or 3 years. He, you know, he obviously, it's easier when you're playing off a guy like Bundiaki and he gives you serious go forward and you can use him as a bit of a dump option to get out of trouble and things like that. But, you know, he's been really good, you know, so I'd be kind of earmarking him as someone that could do a job at a level above. But again, the competition is fierce, so it's tough for him in the middle of the pitch.
Well, that was Connor's comeback. What about Munster's meltdown? 28-15 in front of half time, bonus point secured. Did they just head to the airport, or what have we done?
Yeah, again, like that's a hard one if you're a coach, isn't it? Because when your team is winning, you tend to think they're doing all the work. But then when they're losing, you can't exactly say, well, they're the ones that threw it away. Like, there's something that we create in the environment throughout the week or at half time or whatever you do in your psyche, surely, that, you know, you'd have to go back and visit. Like, you know, did they think they had enough done, or are Zebra just an improving team? Like, they're a dangerous team anyway. I know they don't end up at the right end of the table, but there's always a shock within them. But, you know, you don't, and away from home and everything else, like, things add up. But you don't want to be the history makers where Zebra are getting their first win against you. Like, that's not the side of history you want to be on. And, you know, I think you mentioned it there, there was kind of cracks in Munster's play, particularly their defence. Like, they got broken at the first position off the ruck there a couple of times, twice for 2 tries, and there's a couple of you know, breaks down edges that you just wouldn't think is part of their identity. And I've seen Dennis Leamy coaching, and I know him a bit, I know of him, and I've seen him on their training pitch in their centre, and, you know, it's the same coach that they had the last couple of years and when they won a tournament. So you're wondering how much can change besides, you know, yeah, a couple of positional changes and maybe young guys coming through, but they've always had that throughout campaigns. Like, I don't think the changes there can be the excuse, because they always manage a squad with that many people throughout the year, and you'd hope to not let tries like that go through the middle of you in particular, but then the ones on the edges, they normally slough out. So I think he'll be quite frustrated, because they let in 30-odd points in pre-season, 30-odd points last week, and they've scored 33, I think, was it last weekend. Like, you're conceding 42 points. If you're, like, I often do it. Like, I'm an attack coach, I'm a head coach, but I'm an attack coach. And, like, I'm thinking, if I score 33, have I not done enough on my side? Like, and can I seal the deal? Surely you're going to hold the team to less than that. But the game can be quite attacking at the moment, and there are, you know, big scores being put up. If you look at the league results, there can be big scores, but you don't want to be the ones conceding 42 to Zebra.
How does Graham Rowntree pick them back up again now? He said afterwards that he could be there all night talking about the things that we need to do better, but they just need to be better quickly, really, because it comes around so quick.
Yeah, sometimes you look through those reviews and you're like, Les, that's not us, or that's a simple mistake that we can fix. But when you're making a couple of those or multiple simple errors back to back, you start to wonder, you know, what's causing it. So the only thing is, like, it's not a, you know, early in the season, you get kind of undulating results at times. You'd hope not to, as a coach and as a group, but it can happen. So you kind of have a choice as a coach, don't you? You kind of wipe the slate clean and put it down to something that you've identified, or maybe a lapse in concentration or whatever it is, and you try and just start again and bring positivity to the group, or you can go in hard and cut them apart for what they've done and individualise things and look for better standards. And it just depends on what he's looking for this week to get the reaction from his players, but a reaction is needed. Now, they like going to Cork and they get results there, and Ospreys and Cork isn't the worst one to have another go at it. Mm-hmm. And luckily at the moment, week on week, you're playing, which is where coaches and players want to be, especially at the back of a tough result. You don't want to wait for a week or 2 weeks break like you might get sometimes in the season, so they get to turn it around fairly quickly. But on the other side, they have to turn it around fairly quickly or the pressure comes on.
Yeah, Leinster had another win. They got the job done, 34-6 over the Dragons, but it seems like they laboured a bit to that win and Leo Cullen wasn't too happy afterwards.
Yeah, but, you know, I was kind of thinking about this, and Dragons did show up and they actually caused a bit of trouble in attack as well for Leinster's defence. They found a few holes that they might just not have finished in the first half, and things could have looked a little bit different. But, you you know, it was a 34-6 at the Aviva. And when you look at the result, you're kind of going, easy day at the office. And what else can you really ask for? Like, you know, but I understand when you're looking at the game itself, it was a 10-6 at halftime, something like that. And it's, you know, it's obviously not the free-flowing game that they think they'll get on a nice surface at the Aviva. Like, you know, so I can understand why they're looking for higher standards. But again, you know, you chop and change your midfield a small bit and different changes like that, and you come away with a 34-6 win. I think you can be analytical and you can look for better standards, but at the end of the day, if that's your biggest issue in the year, you're going to have an alright season. So I think you definitely want to learn maybe why teams are cutting them on that kind of that 13 wing or just outside the wing, that kind of space. You maybe learn something from that. But you know, I think if that's your issue, it's a much different issue to what Munster had last weekend. And you'd move on with a couple of lessons, hopefully.
And Ulster fell short to the Lions in Johannesburg, but they did get a point on the road and take a little bit of encouragement from that as well, Johnny.
Yeah, I think they're the kind of things where, you know, objectively, when you stand back, you have to try and look at how many points are we looking to get on the road here, you know. And if you come out with 6 points or sometimes even 5 and 4 points, you look across the length of a season and you might not think it's the worst thing in the world. Like, the Lions were playing in the Currie Cup, weren't they? And there's probably a little bit of cohesion there. I know the South African teams didn't play in the URC last weekend, but that's a difficult place to go to. I think when Munster went there last year and they had a game plan for them and they kind of went to the sky and they brought them down, got tackled, turnover, penalties, and they kicked their goals, we thought it was a great result. So, like, Ulster going there and falling short with the team that they're trying to develop. I know they had a good win the week before, but again, you know, you get certain kind of psychological undulations in a year where a good win makes you feel like you're a bit better than you are, and then a loss, all of a sudden, you know, there's crisis, and it's not really a crisis. So so I think, you know, Ulster, it depends on how they come out of the tour, and it depends on what they do in the next couple of weeks. I think they look back and think, you know, maybe we've fought for a point, we've gotten a certain amount of points on the road in South Africa. I think that South African trip early in the year as well does a lot for your squad, doesn't it? Because you have to be together for a long time, and that's something that, you know, I think it's better coming at this time of the year than it is at the other end of the year, depending on where you're going with knockout rugby and everything else. But they'll take a lot from that regardless, I think. But the Lions are a tough team. You know, they caused a lot of trouble in Connacht as well last year. So it's hard to judge at the start of the season. You win and lose against different teams, and then all of a sudden you see different results play out throughout the year and who beats who. You know, you put it into a bit more context. But any team's disappointed. The provinces in Ireland would be disappointed every time they lose. But I think if they come out of the tour with a couple of more points earned, then they won't be so bad about it.
Yep, doesn't sound bad at all. Johnny Holland, thank you for all of that. Ruby had a technical issue, he's just jumped back in to say goodbye.
Very sorry, I have you. I'm back tomorrow. Myself and Oisín Coyne will be joined by Keith Tracy and Mark Langan to talk Champions League and look back at what happens tonight between Shells and Pats, as well as seeing or talking about Tadej Pogacar's Triple Crown win.